Counterspin Media is unveiling the Great Awakening and resisting the Great Reset in this 12-hour truth-a-thon titled Conquering Darkness, heralding humanity's triumph over the New World Order.
Okay, now before we bring Ozzy Cossack on, we are going to play another Counterspin favourite, Greg Rees, his video, which is all about Russia and the CIA and that involvement there. Let's play that clip.
Over 100 people were murdered in Russia on Friday, including women and children. 11 terrorists were captured by Russian authorities as they attempted to cross the border into Ukraine. They are being interrogated, and all roads lead to the U.S. State Department, who have been directing Ukrainian forces since their 2014 coup. The attack occurred on March 22nd, or 322. 322 is the mysterious number used by Yale's infamous Skull and Bone Society. The official story is that 322 symbolizes the year 322 BC, to memorialize the event seen as the turning point which transformed Athens from a democracy to a plutocracy. A plutocracy is a society that is ruled by no other political philosophy other than the financial elite being in control of the people's destiny. The Skull and Bones is a grooming academy for the CIA, such as former director of the CIA, George Bush, and 322 is their calling card. During the Tucker Carlson interview, President Putin was clearly speaking to the CIA. The CIA responded in a New York Times article admitting that they are using Ukraine as a proxy to wage war against Russia. Weeks before the attack, Victoria Nuland repeatedly boasted that Putin was in for a nasty surprise.
Mr. Putin's going to get some nice surprises on the battlefield, and that Ukraine will make some very strong success this year.
This supplemental funding will ensure Putin faces some nasty surprises on the battlefield this year.
On March 7th, the U.S. Embassy issued a warning about the threat of terrorist attacks in Moscow, specifying concerts. The British Embassy in Moscow mirrored this warning. Days before the attack, Barack Obama paid an unexpected visit to the British Prime Minister at 10 Downing Street.
President Obama, are you worried that Putin will rule forever? President Obama, why should we care about democracy in Russia?
Do you have a few moments?
Will you speak to us? Come and have a chat with us for a minute.
How did it go? What did you talk about?
Within hours of the attack, and without any evidence, the U.S. government blames the attack on the Islamic State and says that Ukraine is not involved. The very next day, while Russians were grieving, CIA mouthpiece The Washington Post gloated how the U.S. had prior knowledge of the attack and people still died. It has been noted that the terrorists were either professional assassins or trained by Western forces, for they were demonstrating NATO training methods such as shooting in small bursts, trigger control, and proper mag reloads. For anyone with eyes to see, this is the modus operandi of the West. Al-Qaeda was famously created by Western intelligence agencies to fight the Russians in Afghanistan, and has been cultivated by the U.S. government and used as a catalyst for illegal wars and tyrannical laws against U.S. citizens. Ukraine's spy chief said 3 months ago, expect more attacks deep inside of Russia.
I'm very glad to see this. Yeah. That's my reaction.
That's your reaction. You're happy to see it.
Yeah.
Do you think there'll be more?
I think so.
Inside Russia? Deep inside Russia?
Deeper and deeper.
Dmitry Medvedev said that everyone is asking him what to do. He answered that those who were caught need to be killed, but it's much more important to kill everyone involved, everyone who paid, who sympathized, and who helped. Kill them all. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Rees.
Joining us now, Simeon Boykov, the Aussie Cossack. You can catch him along most platforms. He is currently in a situation where he is in the Russian embassy in Australia. He spent about 480 days so far there. He's got the goods on a lot of occurrences that are happening. That's why he's in the embassy, because these people, we've been watching his broadcast from way early in the day, and the cops were constantly targeting him, raiding his house for no reason, completely unfounded. They were determined to shut him up, and we're about to find out exactly why they wanted to shut him up. Simeon, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be with you and everyone in New Zealand.
First, give us a... let's address the elephant in the room. One, you're in the Russian embassy. How did you end up there? What's your state of health? Because we've seen, you know, with Kim Stetton on, who was talking about Julian Assange and his incarceration and how the effect it's taken on his health. How are you feeling?
Yes, I'm in the Russian consulate in Sydney. So the consulate building's in Woollahra and the embassy's in Canberra. And I was fortunate to defect and make it into the consulate building before the police could rearrest me after I was released, briefly released after serving the good part of a 10-month sentence for breaching a non-publication order during a YouTube video where, yes, I pled guilty. My crime was naming a pedophile, exposing his identity and name. Many would consider that a public service, but the courts and the police saw that as an opportunity, I believe, to get me back for all the tit-for-tat that was going on from the days of lockdowns, where the police were chasing me. Sometimes I was chasing the police, protests, lockdowns, counter-protests. It was all happening, and you all saw that play out.
Yeah,
the police couldn't get me for anything. And then they got finally their chance. I did my time in maximum security jail as a national security interest inmate. So well, that means that for transportation, I'm in orange overalls like Guantanamo Bay, legs shackled, arms shackled. For some reason, the government thought I was a very, very dangerous inmate, national security interest. And of course, it's just therapy. My crime, or supposed crime, breaching a suppression order, didn't, of course, warrant that kind of a response. And the government showed me what they could do to me. Upon getting out of prison, we appealed the sentence. We won the appeal. Of course, the district court agreed that it was an outrageous sentence and it should never have been imposed, that the severity of it. I tried to leave for Russia. And again, the police grabbed me after an incident again on YouTube during a live stream with some Ukrainian protesters. I was attacked. I defended myself, pushed the protesters.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yep. I watched that, and you were absolutely attacked. You were not the aggressor at all. And so how they could look at that and actually spin it the other way was incredible. So we knew early on, and that was sort of confirmation. They're gonna go hell for leather to get this guy regardless, because he's not playing the game.
Yeah, it was a setup. It was a setup. And while I was in jail, the Russian government was actually interceding on my behalf, defending me. They were publicly calling upon the Australian government to release me, which is absurd, because I wasn't even a Russian citizen back then. So I'm sitting in a cell in jail. The governor of the jail comes to my cell and says, look, the Russian government is trying to get you out of jail. You're not even a Russian citizen. How does that work? Well, finally, in October last year, President Putin gave me Russian citizenship in the form of a special presidential decree. And now that I'm a Russian citizen inside the Russian consulate, there's no way on earth the Australian Federal Police or State Police could enter the premises and grab me. Even Foreign Minister Penny Wong has agreed that although I don't have immunity or special privileges, I'm not a diplomat, I cannot be grabbed because the territory of the Russian consulate is inviolable. Which means they can't enter the territory unless the Russian government gives them permission. And I don't see the Russian government giving me up anytime soon. Of course, Assange was 6 years in the Ecuadorian embassy, and Assange is a great freedom fighter, journalist, who we all look up to, all of us in Australia and around the world, really. And it's a shame that he's still behind bars, but I just wish he defected or surrendered to the Russians like Edward Snowden did. The Russians would not have given him up like the Ecuadorians did. And in terms of health, I mean, mostly the most important thing is vitamin D, getting sunlight and keeping busy. The good thing is I'm very busy broadcasting all the time, working all the time with the Russian Special Military Operation going into its third year now. There's plenty of work to be done in the informational war. So the time passes quickly. I do 16, 17-hour days here. And that's the worst thing for the Australian government. They can't grab me, and there is no opportunity to shut me down because I'm simply not in their jurisdiction. Yes. Where to from here? That's a good question.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, how can you ever leave? Like, how? Because I guess as soon as you step foot outside the gate, you're back in Australian territory.
Yeah, they'll grab me and they'll arrest me and they'll make me serve the parole from the suppression order breach. Then they'll give me time for this ridiculous incident where there was this push and shove with the protesters, the Ukrainian protesters. It was a bigger setup. If you want to have a look at that video, it's floating around online.
It was.
The best thing, I think, for the Australian government to do would be to get rid of me, send me. If they're so worried about me, if they don't like me that much that they consider me a national security interest, an extremely extreme high-risk inmate, as they labelled me on paper, get rid of me. Send me to Russia, one-way ticket. You've got people out there who don't like Russia, who don't like me, and they say, deport the Aussie Cossack. And I say, well, deport me. Let's do it. Let's do a deal. And and as the song goes, I'll still call Australia home, but not with this government in charge. In the future, something might happen. Things might change. Hopefully, the people can win and overcome this cabal, the Morrison cabal, the Albanese cabal. They're all the same. But at the moment, I would accept a deal to go one-way ticket. So it's called free passage. If Albo agrees for the diplomats to put me in the back of the ambassador's BMW and take me straight to Kingsford Smith Airport in Sydney, to a plane, a Russian plane, or maybe even a normal commercial passenger jet in the presence of diplomats, and there's an agreement that I won't be grabbed, well, let's see what we can offer the Australian side. I mean, the Australian side are going on about, let's release Evan Gershkovich, who is a Wall Street journalist, a Wall Street Journal reporter, who's been arrested in Russia. It's actually a one-year anniversary of his arrest. He was arrested for espionage. The Russians consider him a spy. The Australian government is interceding on his behalf. Penny Wong, Albo, all of the elites, the sporting elites, the media personalities. It's all over Twitter. It's all over the news, news.com.au, Herald, Sun, Daily Telegraph. They're saying, release Evan. Well, firstly, the problem there is, why don't they do the same for Assange? Why aren't all these people saying, release Assange? Actually, Evan's got nothing to do with Australia. He's an American citizen who works for the Wall Street Journal, but he's in jail in Russia. Well, my appeal is for the Australian government, if they really want to bring Evan home, and that's a trending hashtag at the moment, bring Evan home, exchange for the Cossack. I'm happy to go to Russia and swap places with him. I'll go to the gulag and Evan can go back to America. No problems with that.
And maybe they can release Assange at the same time.
And Russia's a great place. I mean, it's incredible. It's definitely not like you're told on the movies. You know, they're not all ready to gangster you up and kidnap you and traffic you and all that sort of stuff. These people, at least the officials that I was talking to, because you can always tell body language and if they're pulling a fast one on you, because that's my background. And they're genuine as they actually have a heart. They talk about biolabs. They talk about child trafficking. They talk about all that type of thing. And it's, you know, this...
Pardon? Signal. Okay.
It's incredible. So, so the general rule of thumb in New Zealand, of course, is that the majority of people have been told Russia's bad. They're the bogeyman. They're the basically now they're the Bin Laden of the modern era, okay? And they're eviscerating everyone's rights. But yet, if you look at what they're doing, it resembles nothing to what's actually playing out on the news. These people are saying there is only men and women. Now, that's a biological fact, so they're sticking to common sense, logic, and reason. They're not into the destruction of the child's minds by letting LGBTQ infection spread. Everything that we would want as a decent moral society, Russia are trying to preserve culture, tradition, and the place in the world. What do you think is this extreme attack vectors coming from different ways. Why do you think they're attacking Russia so much? And people like me, because I went to Russia recently and I had something positive to say about them, I'm suddenly a Russian agent. So perhaps I'm going to be in your position one day in the future, because we're facing charges, you know, because this government doesn't like us for exposing their bullshit. Why do you think such a vehement opposition to Vladimir Putin, Sergei Lavrov, and those speaking facts?
Well, Russia is the last bastion of hope for many Christians around the world. Not only Christians, religious people, or people who just want things to be normal and want families to be protected and things to be back as they were once upon a time. And they want to put a stop to the way the West is going downhill, morally going downhill. Russia is a country where the people are very staunch in that regard. The government's very staunch. The people are very staunch. And it's a battle of good and evil. Look at who's up against Russia. All of these countries who are supplying weapons, including, by the way, New Zealand. Although the New Zealand war effort, if you want to call it that, is minuscule, just like Australia's war effort. And it's more virtue signaling. That's what they're doing. They know that New Zealand has no weapons or no amount of money that's available to New Zealand or mercenaries as Australia that can change anything in terms of a war with Russia. But it's all about virtue signaling and them showing their obedience to the globalist cabal, to the globalist elite who have decided to fight Russia. Why? Because all around the West, they're closing churches. In Russia, they're opening churches. All around the West, they're destroying the family unit. They're telling kids to dob their parents into the police. They're telling kids, don't call your mum a mum. Her name is parent caregiver number one, and your dad is parent caregiver number two. That's what's happening in the West, and this is not what we're making up. This is what the West is pushing on our children. That's why so many people are actually moving to Russia. Huge amounts of people, very clever people, very smart people, people who want to see their children grow up at school so they don't have to be worried that what are their children going to be taught while the parents are at work? Can you be confident sending your children to school in Australia and New Zealand with these woke governments that your children won't come home from school and you'll observe them exhibiting some type of promiscuous behavior or some foreign strange adult concepts which they shouldn't be aware of, they shouldn't be taught? They're actually infusing that into the kids. They're bringing up a generation that don't know anything about patriotism, about religion, about being staunch and respecting the traditions that our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents lived by. And that's the difference. And that's why Russia is an enemy. Not only, it's not just over, let's say, Crimea or Donbass or the special military operation. It's in a global, broader sense. Russia is the guardian of the multipolar world, the alternative to Hollywood and Washington and the CIA and Biden and the Obamas and the Clintons. And most countries around the world fall into line into that agenda, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. Russia says no, and Russia's allies say no. And who are Russia's allies? Countries like Iran, countries like North Korea, who we're told are the enemies. But how many countries has North Korea invaded in the last 60 years? None whatsoever. And at least those countries, they are not part of the decaying globalist world. And people around the world, maybe they're not ready to move to Russia, but they certainly many are thinking about it. I've heard from so many people in the West. Look at how many journalists have left and have fled to Moscow. Plenty. Yeah. You would have met when you were over in Moscow recently. You would have met lots of journalists from the West, so-called independent journalists or freedom journalists who are not afraid to go against the narrative, the mainstream media narrative, and they're very welcome in Moscow. The West,
even Scott Bennett, former CIA and operative and all that, has realized he's been, you know, part of the wrong side for a long time, and now he's publicly calling to be a citizen of Russia.
Yes.
We know a lot of people who are thinking, hang on, Russia ain't so bad after all. Everything they're espousing is exactly what I want in my own country that's getting destroyed behind me by these people who are supposedly meant to be representing us. The global community be getting told that Putin is the new Nazi general. So that's projection, because that shit's coming from the Ukraine. Over here, you're told you're a Nazi if you do this, 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 this. But these pricks are actually financing in a big way the Nazis they are talking about. And then setting them against Russia because they're the proxy attack dog for those who don't want to get their hands dirty by themselves just at the moment. And we see this play out. We call it out, but we're the conspiracy theorists, even though we can come up with date, time, facts, and evidence, and they come up with nothing but a good story.
Hey,
Never let facts get in the way of a good story, dear.
I might just cut in here because I find it so fascinating. Like, the mainstream media here has done exactly what Calvin said, smeared us, like they did do to you, Simeon, and just written articles and articles and so many, you know, 6 o'clock news bulletins saying how terrible we are and horrible we are.
Yep.
Calvin gets invited to Russia. Well, we both did, but, you know, we've just had a baby, so...
congratulations.
He came first. But the point is that Calvin... And even though we're facing 14 years, we don't have any travel bans on us, you know, with our court case, but he managed to slip out of the country. Not a single word was said from mainstream media. And he managed to slip back. And no problems from the authorities. It was almost like they actually realised that they couldn't say anything about it. They couldn't draw any attention to it. Because then people would start to question it and actually start to look into it. So they decided to just stay silent on the whole thing. It's just absolutely fascinating.
But then you look at the other side of that. And that because I was allowed to go in and out, all of a sudden, those in the so-called freedom movement, which I hate the freedom movement, by the way, I think they're a bunch of, like you'd have acid. No. Truth movement. If without truth, you don't have freedom. Truth is about facts and evidence. It's not about people wishful thinking.
It's just these different groups. Yeah, like, there's good and bad people in all groups.
I'm an agent now, and it's set everyone against me in that movement. So I think that was actually a deliberate play on their part. This is what you do.
So you're considered an agent of who? Of Russia?
Yeah, yep, I'm a Russian agent now. I thought to myself, you know what? I'll actually take that. I will actually fight and defend Russia till the cows come home. There's no way I'm putting up with the crap that we've seen in this country, and we know the satanic pricks that are behind it and the layers above. That's why Maria, who came on just recently, she did an exemplary job explaining that part of it, because it's multifaceted, of course, and those who are above would make people's head explode if we actually told them what really is there. But they're too wrapped up in their other rubbish. So, yeah, I'm now...
Well, look, I think it's great. I think it's great that you consider yourself a Russian agent. And I think millions of people around the world consider themselves Russian agents. Not the euro, but on a voluntary basis. Yeah. A lot of people around the world are saying, I stand with Russia. Why? Because they realize, they understand that in the battle for good and evil around the world, the global power struggle, without Russia's involvement, without Russia holding the line and being staunch and pushing back against the globalist powers, the average punter, the average mum and dad out there, for example, in Australia, in New Zealand, will have no chance, will have absolutely no chance. Tell me which other country around the world is pushing back. Which other leader around the world besides Vladimir Putin and a few others are actually standing up and pushing back? And Vladimir Putin only 72 hours ago said, we're not against the populations of Western countries at all. Russia is not against people, average people. They're against the elites who are in charge of those countries. And that's why many people who are against the elites in our countries, in the Commonwealth, in Australia, in New Zealand, we understand that... from a strategic sense, it's good to have Russia as an ally. So the fact that you are proud to call yourself a Russian agent, I think it does not sound that outrageous. I think a lot of people would identify.
I'll own that label. They threw the label at me. I'm going to grab it, wear it proudly.
Well, the average New Zealanders think about Russia and the conflict, the special military operation, in your experience?
It's mixed. We have battle lines drawn on that. Of course, you've got the people who are more awake and they understand the history of it and who actually started it. And then they realize the other side of the propaganda. So you've got those, because when you say I stand with Russia, and like me, I stand with Russia in this instance, we say it because it's intentional. It's not a just a to placate the masses, because, you know, throwing around positions like cocktails at a
it's not the current
party. Yeah, it's exactly. It's not just a throwaway line. It's actually something you believe in, as opposed to something you've just been told and accepted because you go along to get along, which is what a lot of these trolls are doing. They're in circles at the moment where some are so heavily indoctrinated, they'll attack their own like rabid dogs if they move off the path. So they're silent. So they say, yeah, we agree, and they go online and they do their virtue signaling, like, yeah, stuff Russia and Putin must die, all that sort of stuff. And of course, then you get the others. You get the whole list. And then you get one person who comes in and they're like the sea change. And they will put in a very good comment that just goes bang. And then it sort of gives confidence for the other people to start coming and reinforcing that. And you see this play out. It's actually very good. And you, when they bring those facts and evidence, you can't dispute it. So then they have to come another way. And they're running out of ammo.
I'd like to say something here about why I like Russia. And this is actually before we even started speaking out. This is years ago. I came across a book. Now, I don't know if you've heard of this book, Simeon, but I know there'll be some people in the audience that have heard it because it's got quite a cult following. And it's called The Ringing Cedars of Russia, or it's also known as Anastasia, written by a Russian businessman, Vladimir Megrin. Now, it's some of my favorite, they're my favorite books to read. They're not a great work of literary art, you know, because he was a businessman, but he introduced me to a side of Russia that made me it's pretty much on the top place that I want to go and visit. I mean, I was clearly had a lot of
she's a little distraught she couldn't come with me.
Yeah, I was very, very jealous. But anyway, but
between the blokes, there was a bit of freedom there for the boys, you know.
Oh my god, don't say that. But yeah, anyway, these books are just about the amazing culture of Russia, the amazing history, these amazing trees. And I mean, you've got to go and read them. There's just packed full of information. And what has come out of these books is a movement within Russia, because it's all about getting the kin domains, giving families the opportunity to go back to the land, to raise their families, to grow fruit and vegetables. And if they actually grow a surplus, they can on-sell that without being taxed. And so they can, it's basically a freedom movement for the people to be self-sufficient. It's not to be confused with, you know, eco-villages or communes of the 60s, but it's very much an empowering thing, describing, you know, what you were talking about earlier, like raising your children and your families in truth and in goodness. And I just want to go and see these communities in Russia, and I want to go and see these schools. There's an amazing forest school where these children are just being taught in a completely different way that we can even imagine here in the West, and they're just learning, you know, what students here would learn in their whole entire schooling system to get to university. Like, these kids are, you know, they're about 14 and they've got the same education standard. And so I want to go there and just see some of the ancient culture of Russia.
Well, guess what? Russia is open for business. It's actually very welcoming to people from the West, such as yourself, who are interested in that type of lifestyle, free from the pressures that you can experience in the West. And look, there's plenty of land and there's plenty of arable land, and Russia is open for business. I know, honestly, a lot of people, if people are interested, there's a website, movingtorussia.ru. I can recommend them as a good place to start. Get in touch with them, movingtorussia.ru. That is a point to start. And there's a professional skills shortage in Russia. So people from the West who are skilled workers, who have good skills, IT, engineering, anything like that, even teaching English, for example. My English teachers there, they get employed very easily. And with all of the sanctions against Russia from the West, that means that people from the West who are willing to go to Russia and want to go to Russia, they'll definitely find successful career paths and lifestyles for them and their families to enjoy and flourish. And let me say, it's a trend. It's a very popular concept. And people often say, well, if you like Russia, why don't you go and live there? Well, guess what? Many people are. Many people are. But those people who are in the West and support Russia, you don't even have to be a mad, you could say, I don't know, Putin supporter to support Russia, even though Putin is very popular. And even in Australia, he got 53% of the vote in the elections here in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth and Adelaide. In Russia, he got 87%. And that's it's a real figure. I mean, our mutual acquaintance, Adrian McRae, was over there now in Russia for the Russian election. And he literally, as an observer, stood there and watched the election take place with his own eyes. He watched people vote. He watched the voting ballots being put into the clear box, a sealed box. He watched the box being opened, and he watched them counting the votes in front of him. And he said 9 out of 10 votes went to Putin. And it's not shocking. Everybody knows that. If you know anything about Russia and you were there, you would have seen in Russia, people actually love their president. They actually support their president. And one of the main reasons why is because they know that the West wants to get rid of Putin so they can enslave Russia, to make Russia just another country that's part of their cabal, that's part of their system, where they will enforce whatever UN mandates and the World Economic Forum and World Health Organization, they will enforce. But Putin is saying no. They blocked Russia from using the world's banking systems and being involved in all these forums, which Russia used to be part of course. Russia was keeping up with the Joneses and was involved. And I'm sure the counter-conspiracy theorists would say, oh, look, but if you look on the World Economic Forum's website in 2001, you'll find Putin. And of course you'll find Putin, because everybody was on there, right? But are they part of that now? No, because they've been kicked out of that, because the West doesn't want Russia to be involved with its plans, and Russia doesn't want to be involved with the West plans. And that's why they're fighting a war. And that is a war between good and evil. And if there are other countries and other nations around the world who are able to push back against these globalists, well, they're probably Russia's allies. And one thing's for sure, we know that there are millions, hundreds of millions, probably billions of people, I would say, around the world who do support Russia and stand with Russia in this global fight. And if we talk about what you call the truth movement, or what others call the freedom movement, I noticed myself that 98% of the people who were against the vaccine mandates and against lockdowns, 98% of those people, they get it. They understand the Russia concept. And they're also on the right side of history when it comes to this issue, when it comes to the issue of Russia. So those people around the world, in the West, in Australia and New Zealand, who have been on the right side of history consistently for all of these different issues that we're challenged with, well, you do have one place in the world where you're welcome, where you have allies, where you have friends, where you'll be treated with honor, dignity and respect, and that's Russia. So what can I say to you and others who are thinking of going over there? Do it. Go for it. Go there, have a look. Go as a tourist, if you like, in the beginning. Travel around Russia. You'll see the Russian people are very friendly, especially very friendly and welcoming to Westerners, to foreigners, who at this time, during a time where the Western governments have joined forces against Russia, it's actually a very lucrative time for you to look for opportunities there. I mean, you know, life is short, really, isn't it? If you look at it, and people don't want to spend their lives living as prisoners, living trapped in a country, although it's a great country. Let's say, for example, Australia is a great country, it's great beaches, great people, great flora and fauna, so forth. But look what's happening here. Look at the cost of living. Look at the taxes. Look at the interest rates. Look at what Australia's become and what it used to be when, for example, our generations before us were here in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Completely everything has changed. So my message is, Russia is open for business. Don't be shy. Knock on the door and somebody will answer.
And what about geopolitically, Simeon, because obviously now, you know, there's World War III looming on the horizons. There's been this recent terrorist attack. Do you want to describe that and explain that a little bit more for people, tease it out? Because obviously we only get mainstream media here and we, you know, don't really get a good insight into what's really going on.
Well, about that terrorist attack on the Crocus City Hall in Moscow, just this morning, actually, a parliamentarian from the European Union, from Netherlands, Marcel de Graaf, actually accused Ukraine of planning and financing that terrorist attack. Of course, as soon as that terrorist attack occurred, within minutes, within hours, the Western media, in a coordinated way, the BBC, the CNN, all of the fake news in Australia, Nine, SBS, ABC, they instantly said it was ISIS. They all blamed ISIS straight away. Where with, let's say, the Twin Towers, they still can't figure out who did it. With the Nord Stream problem, they still can't figure out who did it. And it's been decades, right?
Because it was them.
Exactly. It's been decades. And they tried to blame ISIS to try and deflect the blame. We know that the West and many people in the West were very happy to see that terrorist attack occur. It sounds sick. It is sick. And that's the position of Penny Wong and Albanese, who failed to offer condolences and failed to condemn that attack. Right? Every time there's a terrorist attack in the West, Russia always condemns the attacks. They always offer condolences. If Russia has intel about impending terrorist attacks, they share the intel. The Russian special services share the intel with their Western colleagues. In this situation, the Americans, the Australians, the British, they knew what was going to happen. They teased Russia. They blackmailed Russia and said something's going to happen. There's going to be a big terrorist attack on a concert or a public venue. And that was all they said. So they knew it was going to happen, and they did not go through with actually warning Russia. It's really disgusting. And the way the governments act, the fish rots from the head, because the way the leaders in the West act then sends a signal to people like mercenary Callan Benjamin Lewis from Australia. Now, this mercenary from Australia is now in the Ukraine, call sign Sandberg. And this guy is a former Australian military. He's over there in an Australian uniform fighting for Ukraine for money as a mercenary. And he said, we need more terror attacks. He said, this is great. We should have more things like this, more innocent people being shot in shopping centers. That's sick. I mean, it's sick, but they've normalized that. And I just want to denounce anyone who... And I've heard a few things and a few things people talk about, conspiracy theories about, oh, it was a false flag, it was fake, it was AI, it was a distraction. Anyone who talks in that manner, let me just say, you're absolutely wrong. And that's not the way you should be talking. I mean, it's absolutely real. The victims are real. The terrorist attack did happen. Russia is mourning the loss of those innocent people. But the country is getting stronger and the population is rallying behind the president. So I also want to say thank you, on the other hand, to all of the people around the world who did condemn that attack, who did offer their condolences. And we know that makeshift memorials were set up all around the world outside the Russian embassy in Canberra, the Russian consulate in Sydney, even the Russian embassy in New Zealand. I think it's in Wellington, I believe.
Yes.
You probably know, you've been there to get your visa.
Yeah, they actually opened up on their national holiday in Russia just to facilitate my visa on the Friday. It was incredible.
They were very lovely people, actually. Very good to deal with.
There you go.
And so efficient. Definitely more efficient than the West, I can tell you.
You got a special treatment opening up the embassy just for you. And maybe you are a Russian agent.
I'll tell you what, all I need now is to get paid.
Do you prefer rubles or potatoes?
Actually, potatoes. I'll take the potatoes. I can always grow more and sell them.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yep. Okay, one thing I want to address
World
as well.
World War III. We didn't get to World, like, what's
happening.
We're
going to get there in a minute. Going to get there in a minute. First of all, I want to cover off that ISIS one because you're exactly right. It just happens just like the Twin Towers. All of a sudden, Bin Laden did it, you know. So we've got to go and invade countries that we really wouldn't have been able to invade if the public didn't buy into it. So we had to lie to them and create this for it. And the old ISIS thing. As soon as I heard them say ISIS that quick, I said, well, we know it ain't ISIS at all. Yeah. It's not the Israeli Security Intelligence Service. So I said, I could tell it's not ISIS because ISIS usually deal in small arms and suicide vests. And they want to go and meet their maker and get the 72 virgins promised and all that. So they would usually blow themselves up and will not get captured. It's very unlucky if they get captured. So you could rule ISIS out of that. So I knew straight away we were being lied to. And that's when I thought to myself, that's why I started watching more. I looked through that time of your broadcasts and that and see where it was actually tracking. Now, the one thing I want to know from you is the pictures of the ones that they caught heading towards the Ukrainian border or in that region, 100 something miles from it, are they
real? Are they real photos? Are they, you know, or have they got others? How big is the net so far of people involved, other than the 4 to 6 whoever were, who were on the ground pulling the action?
And how can you even question that? Are they real? Are those photos real? Is there anything to suggest that the Russians published fake?
Oh no, I'm doing devil's advocate because I'm dispelling all these idiots who are saying.
Okay, so who are these idiots? Who are these idiots that are questioning that?
The trolls online. How Russia's, you know, basically
These are the same idiots who at the beginning of the war said it's fake. Every time there was a video of a bomb going off or a missile hitting, oh, it's fake. It's a distraction. Yeah. It's not real. Yeah. It's a psyop. These people are mentally ill, if they're saying.
They are.
They're sick in the head, right? They'll say that about everything. Anything that happens, it's fake. It's a psyop. It's not real. It's AI. It's something else. And you know what it is? That lack of intelligence, when they have nothing to say, that's what they say. And that's what they say to try to bring the initiative back to their point of view and to show everyone that they're smarter than everyone. But really, they say the same thing about everything. Exactly. They'll say the same thing about anything that happens, especially when something is shocking, when something is traumatizing to watch, when it's a shocking event. A lot of people actually, the way they deal with that trauma, because it's not only traumatizing being at this event or being a victim or being a witness. It's also traumatizing watching these events with the advent of live updates through social media, through Telegram, through live videos. People can see what happens at terrorist events, and they often live stream these tragic situations. Mm-hmm. The people can see it straight away. And that's why you see this explosion of couch keyboard warrior experts who say it's fake, it's AI, it's not real, it's a distraction. Well, a distraction from what? This is the world. This is real. War is real. World War III is real. So what can I say to those people?
Yeah, no, I think you summed it up quite well. And I brought that up deliberately because I wanted to show them the difference between your Russian experience and how they come to conclusions, or they investigate. They follow the chain of evidence to its ultimate conclusion. They do not have a target and build the evidence to that. And in the West, we have what we call the shock and awe. It happens all the time. The West Intelligence Service have spent billions of dollars on warfare of the mind, cognitive readjustment, we call it, and compartmentalization. So what they do is they show you a harrowing image or picture. Then they tell you what you're seeing, because at that point your brain splits. It tries to make sense of its surroundings. They tell you what you're looking at, and then over a period of weeks, they pack in that propaganda, sustained propaganda, to then form that and make that a core belief you have. So any challenge against it from people who have the facts is not going to get through. So that's the difference between what we saw with the Russian experience and what we see usually with the Western creations or theaters, let's say. So that was my point on that. I wanted to show people that, and you came across, see, that you could tell your body language, genuine, you know it, you saw it, you've heard about it, the people you got the other information off from outside sources, they're trusted because they've been proven to be trusted all that time. On the other side, there is none of that. So I'm trying to get people to disassociate from the propaganda network and actually come to their own, following their own common sense, logic, and reason to get to those conclusions, and they'll see the world in a whole different way.
Well, look, people who say that was the Russian government attacking themselves, well, I can answer that question. Putin had just been elected on March the 17th, and so literally 48 hours later, he's just been elected, he's won an outstanding decisive victory, not only a majority of the votes, but also a huge turnout where so many voters voted. They had planned all these events to celebrate his victory all around the country. And instead of celebrating the president's re-election, the country is plunged into national mourning, where everyone's praying and laying flowers and everyone's upset. And instead of talking about what a great election, we've got our leader back, as wouldn't you say that would be the normal thing for a quote-unquote, as the West calls him, a dictator to do, to have parades and have military parades and banquets and champagne and say, well, I'm back in business, here I am, I'm your tsar, I'm your king, I'm your president for the next 6 years. Yeah. Wouldn't that be a normal reaction? Why would he attack himself? Why would he attack himself? He's just been elected. The first thing you do, what should I do? I've just become president again. Oh, why don't I attack myself and unleash some people with AK-47s in a shopping center? It's ridiculous. Makes no sense, absolutely. And
exactly. And that's the book out. That's a leaf out of the West playbook where they usually do it before an election to garner the sympathy to get the vote to then go in and carry on their criminal activity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the good thing is with Russia, they don't need false flags to get support. The Russian people genuinely support their president. You were just in Moscow. You probably wouldn't have met anyone who doesn't like Vladimir Putin.
I actually didn't.
You didn't meet one person, whether it's your taxi driver or your hotel receptionist or your waitress or a person on the street or a student or a pensioner or a soldier or a policeman or a factory worker or anyone you meet. They all say that we vote for Putin. And not because you're holding a microphone or a camera to them and saying, let's do an interview for the Western media. Because this is just in passing conversation. People genuinely love their president in Russia. I mean, it's a foreign concept because in Australia, what, Albanese got, what, 32 or 33%? I think 32% of the vote.
We hate our politicians, let's face it, because they do nothing that they say they're going to do. They give them on false promises. It's like if they come with a warranty, would be exercising it to hand the bastards back.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then the West can't understand why is President Putin popular. And you know what? It's not up to us to explain that. We don't have to justify it. Like Margarita Simonyan, the chief editor of Russia Today, said to that BBC journalist a few days ago, she said to him, we don't do things the way you do, and we don't really like you. There's a different attitude in Russia to the leader. We respect the leader. We love the leader. We love the president. We're proud of the government. We're proud of the country. We're proud of the armed forces. Now, that is a foreign concept in some countries of the West. They don't understand that. They don't, because they've been watered down. They don't understand the concept of patriotism. Look what's happening in Australia. Anzac Day parades are getting smaller and smaller. In some places, they've cancelled them completely. We know what parades are getting bigger and bigger in Australia, and they're not Anzac parades, and they're not parades for patriotism. They're parades for something which is outrageous and that should be kept in the bedroom and away from the innocent eyes of children. And that's the decline of the West. So they hate Vladimir Putin because he represents staunchness. He represents men who are masculine. He represents women who are feminine. He represents mothers, fathers, children. He represents Russia's thousand-year history. He represents the Orthodox Church. He represents Christianity. He represents a future which is sustainable from a moral point of view. But Russia is not saying that it's exclusive or it's better than anyone. Far from that. Russia is saying we want to work with everyone all around the world. All of the people out there, just like you guys watching, who are looking for hope, right? Because I know it's sometimes hard. You lose hope when you're living in the West, when you're in New Zealand, when you're in Australia, and you're under so much pressure. When the courts are against you, and the police are against you, and the council's against you, and the state government and the federal government, you lose hope, and you think, well, what is the light in the tunnel? Let me tell you, there is no such thing as white hats. There's no such thing as intergalactic spaceship which is going to land and free everybody, and there's no point in believing that or hoping in that, right? But you can believe in Russia. You can hope there because it's a real place. It's not fake. It's not the words or the ideas or manifest of a cult leader who's promising a date where the world's going to end or something's going to happen. There's no false promises. Russia is Russia. It's real. You can go there. You can touch it. You can see it. You can be a part of it because Russia's open for business. You've just returned from there. And I encourage everybody from New Zealand. I mean, you know yourself when you were there, when you said you're from New Zealand, what was the reaction of people in Moscow around you when you said where you're from?
One, surprise that I made the trip. Two, that I wasn't in awe of anything. I was straight up. But they loved the fact that over 70 countries would come to see for themselves, and they wished more would do that because they see the media from the outside world, so it's obviously not blocked in Russia. We had a hell of a job trying to get Russian information because they are blocked other places.
It's incredible how the you get. I had to go to Russia to have more free speech than here.
Why don't you tell them about what happened? So obviously, New Zealand's issued. I can't remember how many sanctions against Russia. Like the most.
Europe, I think, is 15,000 sanctions they've done against Russia.
But I mean, for us, against any other nation, like we've never done it.
New Zealand, for some reason, is the tick on the arse end of a dog at the other end of the planet, thinks it can. Take down the bear by issuing sanctions against Russia. And it's probably Russian diplomats in Russia, New Zealand's sanctioned more than anyone else anywhere. So there is something seriously wrong with that picture.
But you got, what I was going to say is you got roaming on the data.
Yeah.
But we don't have
Apparently Spark over here used to be our telecom, which we owned until they decided to sell it out from under us and then charge us more after telling us it'd be less expensive. I go to Russia and I have a data plan over here that I buy. So data's from the net, right? Data you take from the net. So over there, one day, 4.4 gigabytes of data, one day, over $26,000 New Zealand dollars they're trying to charge me. For that one day.
They're charging
you. And I got back and had a look, and I still had data to use. And they said, because we don't have a reciprocation with Russia. I said,
what's the name of the company?
Spark over here.
We should name and shame them. And look, don't pay that bill. Just challenge them and challenge them all the way and just keep complaining and keep challenging. They'll eventually say, okay, will you pay 50%? And you say no. And they'll say, will you pay 70%? And you say no. And just stick to your guns and don't give in because that's completely outrageous to charge you 26,000.
4.4 gigabytes of data for 26,000 bucks over a one-day period where I actually still had, when I looked on my app, I still had data spare because it's a 100 gigabyte plan. I was only up to like 72 gigabytes used. And they said, because there's no reciprocal deal with Russia, we have to pay. And I said, well, if there's no reciocal deal with Russia,
hang on, but you're a Russian agent, so why don't you just send the invoice to the embassy?
Imagine that. I wouldn't do that to my, I'll stand on my own feet, but.
And then I rang Spark while you're away and asked them about it. And they
tried to say it was calls.
Yeah, they actually said, no, it's not data, it's calls. And then I said, well, he would have had to make 5,500 calls.
Oh, great. So all the conversations are recorded with these telcos when you ring them. So they've admitted already to you that it's not data, it's calls. Then you can say to them, well, great. It's not data, so we can, anything that's that charges for data, you're agreeing that it's wiped, it's not valid, and I'll pay for the calls. So what are they going to do? They can charge you for the calls, but let them show you.
We got no evidence of that. But on here, the bill says 4.4 gigabytes of data. That's it. Over 26,000 New Zealand dollars. I ain't paying that crap. Because if there's no reciprocal deal with Russia, my phone wouldn't work there. So they're a bunch of lying pricks because they come up with Spark and Esprit or something. Mm. So we know there's a connection and at work there.
Look, New Zealand, with its sanctions against Russia, is trying to play a very dangerous game. And they've been shipping weapons off to Ukraine. They've been sending military aid. Now, does New Zealand have a large army, does it? Does New Zealand have a lot of extra planes and jets and tanks and missiles and shells and bombs? Of course not.
Our military planes that carry the prime ministers keep breaking down.
Yeah, not just that. We've been on critical manning in the military for a long time. No one wants to join it. The guys who are in there, ideologically, some of them are very good. Others just buy into the narrative. They get, it's like they're like barking dogs. That's why some of us don't last in there, because we're not the "you point, we'll go and bite" type thing. We actually question why we're being pointed in that direction.
I'll put this to you: there would be powers out there, and there would be lobby groups who would love to see the demilitarization of New Zealand and Australia, to remove and demilitarize whatever weapons, defensive capacity Australia and New Zealand have left. Now, how do you do that? If you're someone who's sitting there thinking, how do I get rid of New Zealand's military without fighting it in a war? How do I strip Australia down? How do I get rid of 120 Bushmasters? How do I take away all the M777 artillery systems? How do I get Australia to voluntarily hand over all of these armored personnel carriers, missiles? How? Well, you need to come up with a very sophisticated and clever plan. And this is what this could be. This could be the excuse to demilitarize. You know how many countries have now been demilitarized thanks to the Russian special military operation. Countries like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Denmark handed over all of its artillery, all of its guns, all of it. Germany has demilitarized itself. Australia is got a gaping hole where weapons used to be. And now the Ukrainians know that there's 56 Abrams tanks left in Australia's arsenal in storage. They want that as well. So they want to strip Australia down. In 5 or 10 years' time, and I'm not warmongering here, I'm just saying hypothetical, in 5 or 10 years' time, if there's a big conflict in the Pacific, if a major power in the Pacific, right, we're not going to point the finger at China, but it could be anyone. It could be Indonesia. It could be any country in the Pacific. If they want to take Australia and New Zealand down, they would look back and give the order of Mao Zedong, the highest military honor, to those people who managed to demilitarize Australia and New Zealand. Because every piece of weaponry which is taken away from Australia and New Zealand is not replaceable. There's a global arms shortage thanks to this war. This war that's going now, more tanks, more helicopters, planes, armored personnel carriers have been lost, destroyed in these last 3 years between Russia, NATO, in Ukraine than in all the wars combined since World War II. It's massive to look at the numbers, looking at like 15,000 tanks either side. It's crazy. Where Australia only has, 56 tanks in storage. Well, I don't know how many New Zealand's got, but I would be surprised if it's more than 10.
I'll tell you what, the gangs in the country have more armaments than our defence force has.
So that's the thing. If you're a patriot of New Zealand and you love New Zealand, if you're a patriot of Australia and you love Australia, right, you consider yourself an Anzac and you love the country you're born in, that you live in, you would be saying no to sending weapons overseas. You'd be saying, exactly. No, these are our tanks. These are our jets. These are our weapon systems. Leave them at home. We need them. But that's not what the people in the government are saying. The people in the government are facilitating this, saying, let's send everything.
Not only are they doing that, they also give them $100 million to do it. And this is all part of that UN disarmament program, which is what Maria was talking about before. And that was always to come about through war, starvation, and disease, the total subjugation of humanity. And it's playing out in perfect black and white right before us, and still many are not seeing it. It's incredible the amount of cognitive dissonance that's actually going on.
We are coming up to the top of the hour, Simeon, and I do want to say we are missing your videos with the police out there on the streets of Australia, but you've gone from strength to strength, and it's amazing to see how far you've come. Is there anything else you want to say to the audience before you go and let people know where they can follow your work?
Well, look, if you've been watching from the beginning a few years ago, it's great to be with you. And the police, they did a campaign just like against all of us. They didn't just campaign against me. Every single one of us, every single one of you watching, was on the receiving end of police intimidation and harassment tactics. And in the end, we win. In the end, we win. The police are demoralized. They've got record numbers of people resigning and leaving the police force. The government's demoralized. They've got no direction. They've got no future. So what can I say? Continue holding the line. And you should know that you're not alone. If anything, you have Russia as your ally. And those people who do support Russia online, on social media, out and about in the West, it's appreciated. It'll be noted. It's noticed. And the future is bright because you're on the right side of history. You've got nothing to worry about. You won't have a guilty conscience like all of these politicians. So if you want to continue following my work, have a look at Aussie Cossack on Telegram and Aussie Cossack on X. I've been banned off YouTube. That's why you can't find me there.
Join the club.
Yeah, Aussie Cossack on Rumble also. And a pleasure to be with you guys. I wish you all the best at Counterspin Media, and it's a pleasure to join you.
Thank you so much. And say hi to your lovely wife. And I do want to say I got given a Russian cake while Calvin was away, just in kind of sympathy, you know, so I could enjoy some Russian culture as well and cuisine. And it was a honey cake, and it was so beautiful. It's my new favorite cake.
Oh, good on you, lovely. Enjoy the Russian cake. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Simeon.
And we'll have to get, when this is all sorted and we've got rid of the idiots, we'll have to bring you over for that Marlborough wine tour.
Definitely.
Yes, Cloudy Bay, my favorite drop from New Zealand.
Excellent. Brilliant.
We'll have it on ice.
Thanks for coming. Take care.
Keep checking back on counterspinmedia.com and look under the videos tab for more videos from the Conquering Darkness Truthathon.
Counterspinmedia.com, where lies come to die.